Let me start by thanking the organizers for organizing this meeting, first of all, and inviting me to speak. So I'll talk about some work I recently finished with Ben Krups and Saf Seti, and as John mentioned, the title is A Matrix Big Bang. So it has to do with cosmology again, and indeed it's sort of an attempt to understand what's really happening at the singularity of the Big Bang, but in a particular model. Well, let's all explain. So it's going to be a short talk, but anyhow, I'll start it with an outline and even a summary. So I'll start with, well, first of all, motivating why you are interested in singularities, and then I'll propose a particular model, which is the light-like linear dilaton background. And I'll show it's a model for a null singularity in both the Einstein frame in 10 dimensions, or if you list it to M-theory, you also get a singularity there. And so we know from M-theory there are some proposals for dual description in terms of matrix theory. So we're going to study this in the particular case of this light-like linear dilaton, and we'll find some super Yang-Mills description in 1 plus 1 dimensions. And so there we have at least a description of the physics in some non-perturbative way. And so what it's going to look like is that we have some description of the Big Bang singularity. Well, we have at least some singularity of that kind here, where time, instead of being sort of ordinary time, is going to be light cone time because we have a null singularity. And so in the far future, we'll have the weakly coupled strings, and in the beginning, there's something like matrices. So maybe this is an answer to what the nothingness might be describing in this case. Also, let me add an apology. I won't give any references or mention names in this talk, and it can be found in the paper. So why in singularities? I mean, there are, of course, singularities in black holes in general relativity. We meet them in cosmology. The Big Bang and the Big Crunch are examples of it. And there are several kinds of singularities you can consider, space-like, time-like, or light-like. And the case we'll be dealing with here will actually be of the kind of the light-like type. Did I almost do so? Okay, I won't. All right, sorry. Generic singularity will have divergent curvature, and we'll indeed see in our case that there will be curvature in our singularity. And also, another characterization of a singularity is that it's geodetically incomplete. So string theory, we have an old hope that they can solve singularities, and there are some examples like orbifolds, conifolds, and in particular some time-dependent orbifolds, which sort of are similar to the things we are describing here. And I'll mention two cases, since we'll need one of them in a minute. The Milner space is a space where you start from Minkowski space and you mod out by a Lorentz boost, and then you get a singularity at the origin. But you get the forward part, which is sort of like a universe which we could live in. But there are also other parts, like the past, and there are some whiskers on the side. Another example which avoids these whiskers and having, in particular, close time-like curves is the null orbifold, which I denote here, where you have another Lorentz transformation. And then the singularity is of a light-like type. And our model will be very much like this, except here one is dealing with flat space, so there's no curvature except on the singularity. And what we'll be having is indeed a singularity with an exponential divergent curvature. So here's the model. It's the light-like linear dilaton. It's a very simple model. I mean, you could have thought of it many years ago, but somehow people didn't. We have used dilatons in many cases to construct non-critical string theory, but if you take a light-like direction, then there's no change in the central charge. So this is also time-dependent. The string coupling is going to depend on the light cone time in this way, and we chose a minus sign here, so it goes to infinity when the time goes to minus infinity, because that's where we're sort of going to have our Big Bang kind of singularity. Why this is a singularity will become clear in a minute. First, let me make some comments on the solution. It's a BPS solution because it can show that the variation of the Delfino actually is equal to zero for about half of the spinners in the supersymmetry transformation. It's also a solution to the equation of motion, which is pretty clear because the stress energy of the dilaton, if it's just a simple linear dilaton, actually vanishes. It's the second derivative of the dilaton field. And of course, the world sheet, I mean, that's why we are using linear dilatons, is that the world sheet description is very simple. There's a simple only correction to the world sheet stress energy tensor, and the central charge remains the same, so we stay in 10 dimensions because of the light-like nature of the linear dilaton. By the way, the parameter Q is redundant. By a boost, I can rescale Q to any value except to zero. So it doesn't really, there are not many, it's only one solution basically labeled by this Q. So I want to show now that it's indeed a model for a Big Bang type singularity, as long as we think about time as being in the light zone direction. Because if we go to the Einstein frame, we are rescaling the metric with this exponential, and you see that the universe is expanding as a function of light zone time. This can be made more explicit even, that there's indeed even a singularity there, if we change the coordinates, because I can use a coordinate redefinition by introducing U, which is this exponential appearing in front of the action, or the metric, I should say. And then the metric is very simple, actually. It reduces to the usual light zone metric, but then the transversal part of the space is multiplied by U, so that's expanding. But the point where x goes to minus infinity, x plus goes to minus infinity, now corresponds to U equals to zero. So there's a singularity, actually, at U equals zero. You can check, indeed, it's a singularity because the curvature will diverge for finite values of U, namely U going to zero, which means that there's indeed a geodesic incompleteness in this space-time. This metric only makes sense for U larger than zero because you note that if I change U, the sign of U, it actually changes signature. And you can check indeed that there's a solution of string theory because the Einstein equations are still satisfied. So this is the model we're going to look at, and indeed the appearance of the singularity is particularly obvious in these coordinates. So, well, what can we say about it? We can, of course, study it in perturbation theory, and string theory in a light-like, in a linear dilaton is very simple. And actually, because we have chosen a light zone direction, it's very natural also to think about it in light zone gauge, where we use the same x plus direction to fix our light zone gauge. And so there's also a condition on the spinners in the green torch formulation. And so the world sheet action looks like this. By the way, this is slightly the condition we also had on the spinners in the supersymmetry transformation. So the unbroken supersymmetries actually corresponds to shifts in theta. The difference only with the flat space, because it's exactly like flat space, is that the string coupling constant is actually time dependent as a function now, well, because of this gauge, as a function of basically the world sheet time tau. So we have the action the same, but the only thing is that the world sheet the coupling constant depends on the world sheet time. And so if we start doing perturbation theory, we do get the usual answers, except that we have to multiply now the whole expression by things that depend on the coupling. And here I have sketched some diagrams which could represent some G-loop end string amplitude. And you find that indeed the amplitude gets multiplied by an appropriate power of the string coupling, but integrated over the insertion point of the, where you put the string coupling constant. And I have to put in a cutoff here because this will diverge in general. And so the string perturbation theory breaks down when this sort of goes to minus infinity. So there's really strong coupling happening in the far past, and this also, of course, appears in if I do the calculation. The signal of the singularity, which I noted in the Einstein frame, is that indeed the string perturbation theory breaks down. I note, by the way, and this world sheet formulation, the description is quite different from what Eva talked about. We don't see any sign of tachyons, so we really have to deal with what's going on when tau goes to minus infinity. So string perturbation theory doesn't really work, but we can try and find now a better formulation of it using sort of an M-theory point of view. So what I described so far actually is equally valid for type 2A or type 2B, but now to go to the M-theory description, let me choose to do this in the type 2A context. So in type 2A, we can list the solution to M-theory, and there's the usual rules that we know quite well. If I know the string coupling, I can calculate what the radius is of the 11th dimensional circle, and it depends on the light cone time. So this is our solution. There's also rescaling of the 10-dimensional metric, which was sort of the flat metric here, and sort of it looks similar to the metric in the Einstein frame, and actually the calculation of the curvature and things like that go pretty analogous. And also here you'll find that there's a singularity appearing. If you define again new light cone coordinates, which I wrote down here, by using again the exponential in front of the metric, you find this simple form of the metric. And there's now a term U multiplying the transversal coordinates, but also the 11th direction, which I denoted by Y, actually expands as a function of U. So if U goes to zero, you shrink these dimensions and this one expands. But the only singularity actually in this situation is at U equals zero, because, well, you can calculate the curvature invariance, the curvature components of the Riemann tensor, and you find the same kind of form, except there is now a difference in the sense that the Einstein equations now have no source, there's no dilaton in here, and indeed you can check that the Riemann Ricci tensor vanishes precisely because we are in 11 dimensions. So the singularity is again of this type. The metric makes sense for U larger than zero, and we have a singularity at some light-like speed at U equals to zero. So now I want to describe this in a dual formulation in terms of matrix theory. And well, I know it has been quite a while since people worried about matrix theory, but let me first then remind you what sort of it looked like. So we're going to look for a matrix theory description, and I'll present actually two derivations of it. One starts from the 11-dimensional description that Bang, Sister, Suskind, and Schenker proposed many years ago. They wrote down this action. Or actually they wrote on the Hamiltonian, but it could be derived from this action. And what we have to do now is actually apply it, but first generalize it to the curve background that we have corresponding to our light-like linear dilaton. Now you see that the x plus direction actually is the direction corresponding to the light cone time tau again. So these xi's are nine coordinates, eight of which are the little xi's here, and the other one is the y direction. So I have to split this in various terms, and also include then the factors that come from these exponentials. Well, if you work that out, and also take into account that indeed the tau derivatives, for example, here have to be taken with respect to the appropriate metric, you get some long expression. And there I singled out the y direction explicitly, but the thing I want to point out in this expression is that there are various terms appearing which contain these exponentials, e to the q tau, multiplying the kinetic term for the y squared, for example, and, in some other places. Now, if you make the reduction on S1, because this theory is not 11-dimensional, it's 10-dimensional because the y coordinate is compactified. You do this in the usual, a la Watty-Taylor trick. You replace d the matrices by covariant derivative, and the trace also includes an integral over sigma coordinates, and then you get some one plus one dimensional Tupper-Yang-Mills with a what appears to be a time-dependent coupling. Well, we had a time-dependent string coupling, and so we get some time-dependent coupling on the world sheet of the young one-dimensional Yang-Mills. But there's actually another way of describing it, which I'll show in a minute, or on the next slide, actually, is we can also have a time-dependent world sheet instead. So this is going to be the main part, actually. This is where we're going to describe the dual formulation of our light-like linear dilaton background in terms of a matrix model. It's a matrix string because it's a 1 plus 1, so it's like the string world sheet action we had before, but now the coordinates are matrices, and it's coupled to a Yang-Mills theory on the world sheet. And in here I've written down various terms which involve the coupling constants of the string. And in the linear dilaton, indeed, the string coupling is time dependent. So here I made again the identification of the light cone direction in space with the light cone with the time on the world sheet. But if you think about this as a Yang-Mills theory, actually there's a relation between the string coupling and the Yang-Mills coupling. The Yang-Mills coupling would actually appear as 1 over g squared in front of here, and as g squared and g Yang-Mills up there. But there's also actually another difference, is namely the Yang-Mills coupling is the Benson full, and so you have to include something that involves the sort of the determinant of the metric on the world sheet. And so this is why, if this is time dependent, there are two choices. Either you take the Yang-Mills coupling to be time dependent, or you take the world sheet metric to be time dependent. And that's the thing we're going to do. And I forgot to mention the rank of the gauge group here is actually determined by the P plus eigenvalue. So we're doing it in a discrete Lightcone gauge, so where we compactify the x minus direction. And so the P plus eigenvalues are quantized, and n is going to be the rank of the gauge group we have in here. So the variables appearing in here are the matrices. So as I pointed out, I mean, the metric can be taken time dependent, and indeed, if you take here this to be due to the square root of the determinant of this metric, you find that you can write the metric in this form, where you sort the exponential in front of the axis of the metric. So this metric would be the world sheet metric. Of course, in ordinary string theory, you don't care about any conformal factor in front of it because it's conformally invariant. But precisely these terms which appear in here are actually not conformally invariant, and so they will become time dependent. But this is just another way of writing another space which we already saw before. It is the Milner space, if you think about it in another way. So this metric is the forward quadrant of Milner space. This can be made explicit if you introduce flat world sheet coordinates, which I call psi plus minus, which are these exponentials. Then you can write this world sheet metric really as a flat metric on the world sheet. But because sigma is periodic modulo 2 pi, there's actually an identification in the size with a Lorentz boost. So indeed, you have identified the two sides, I mean, you've identified the Minkowski space with some Lorentz boost of this kind, and that's precisely how we constructed Milner space. So this is our model, and now it's pretty clear that where the singularity appears is where tau goes to minus infinity, or psi actually then is zero, psi plus or minus. So that's the tip of this space. So this is where the singularity is. And so on the world sheet, we also have a singularity. But the world sheet theory is just a gauge theory. It's not a gravity theory, and it's a very simple theory to work with. Actually, if you think about it, at the coupling constant of Yang-Mills theory here is constant. But it has a dimension full parameter. So in early times, when we are really close to the singularity, actually, you can think about the Yang-Mills coupling as being very small. So perturbative Yang-Mills actually holds near the singularity. And at late times, that's where these terms will become important. Think about the time independence of the string coupling. You find that if the coupling becomes weak in late times, the potential becomes important, and you get the sort of matrix string description of weakly interacting strings. I should say one thing actually, the Young-Mills action is actually supersymmetric. It has many supersymmetries coming because this is the dimensional reduction of n equals 1 in 10 dimensions. But the boundary conditions which I posed here actually break the supersymmetry on the world sheet. And the reason is that the only supersymmetry on the world sheet is actually due to, the boundary conditions which you have here, which are boosts, they're not part of the supersymmetry algebra, and actually they don't commute with the supercharges. So indeed, this action actually has a broken supersymmetry. So you might wonder actually whether the potential terms which are here might receive corrections. And this is one issue we haven't really completely solved yet. And now the picture appears quite clearly that we have a Young-Mills theory on the space where near the singularity we have to use this matrix description. I would like to mention at the end another derivation of this. I mean, I mentioned the derivation from the 11-dimensional matrix theory, but if you don't know about it, let me actually give a derivation, and here I use a method due to Cyborg, where I am a little more careful about where I how I'm going to define the DOCQ description, the discrete light zone description. So the idea is to start in 10 dimensions. So we start in the linear Dilaton background in 10 dimensions. And the discrete light zone, if you remember, had a periodic x minus coordinate. And the idea of Cyborg was actually to make that instead of a null direction, slightly a space-like direction by also including a shift in x plus. But here we are not allowed to do that because shifting in x plus is not a symmetry. So we do a slightly different thing. We add one of the coordinates in here, say x1, we just choose one, and actually it will not be important which one we choose. And then we include a parameter epsilon times r in the shift, and we want to send eventually epsilon to zero. Now by doing a Lorentz transformation, you actually get that this identification which I made here is indeed space-like. It's just a compactification of some circle which goes to zero when epsilon goes to zero. Now you perform a T and an S duality, and well, by the T duality actually you get again a circle, but the circle has a radius which goes to infinity when epsilon goes to zero. And the nice thing is that the sector we are interested in, which is the T plus equals N over R sector, gets mapped into a description of D1 brains which are stretched along this dual X direction. And this is precisely where we make the connection with the formulation I had before, because the world volume theory or world sheet theory of the D1 brains is precisely the Young-Mills theory I had before. And actually this is a framework in which you can make much more precise how all the modes couple or decouple. And in particular you can show that in epsilon to zero limits, string oscillators and gravity will decouple. So we conclude we have a pretty good description actually of the background near the arbitrary close near the singularity, and we don't see any signal why we should stop at a certain distance. But of course many questions, and this is what I would like to describe here, list here the some of the conclusions. So we have a light-like linear Dilaton as a model for a singularity in string theory, and we have its dual description. Near the singularity, we describe it in terms of weakly coupled super Young-Mills, which is where we have the matrices. And I mentioned the issues of supersymmetry. And one question which one would like to answer here, of course, is, well, it has been raised in other talks today as well. Does time begin here, or can we really propagate through the singularity? And I think this is still an open issue. We have to use then now our formulation and study this one plus dimensional gauge theory on this Milner space, and there you can ask, well, can you propagate to it? There are some problems because of boost identifications that you have made, but we believe the problem is better solvable or tractable at least than in the gravitational case, where the conclusion was really negative that you cannot make sense of this. So one has to study this more and more carefully. And finally mention some generalizations that people have looked at and can still look at. I mean, first of all, this linear Dillikum background appears in quite some special limits of other known backgrounds that we have. But by T and S duality, we can map it also to other solvable backgrounds. Actually, it's very nice to see that the methods of writing down the solution actually can be worked for any Dillikum profile. So there are half DPS solutions in 10 dimensions which look like this background when we write down some Dillikum which depends on X plus but in some arbitrary way. And they have maybe some Big Bang and Big Crunch or other types of features. So this is where I like to end.
Questions? Yes?
Since your space-time was half DPS, why did your matrix model end up not being supersymmetric?
Well, it's the usual way it happens in string theory, too. We know that in light tone gauge string theory, half of the space-time supersymmetries are represented by the zero modes of the coordinates,
yes,
and the other half by the world-sheet supersymmetry. So the components that are unbroken in space-time are the ones which are the zero modes of the
okay,
the thetas, but not the world-sheet supersymmetry. So the world-sheet supersymmetry is broken, and indeed that's the number of supersymmetries of n equals 1 in 10 dimensions, while the space-time had n equals 2. So all of the world-sheet supersymmetries, the 16 supercharges, yeah, of the world-sheet have been broken. And the 16 that are unbroken in space-time are simply the shifts of the zero modes of the world sheet.
Is having exact supersymmetries for the zero modes a strong constraint on what the model might be? I just asked because of the question you mentioned of whether there could be corrections to the Hamiltonian you wrote.
I don't think that having shifts in theta might prevent any potential terms from happening. The reason why we believe that it still should work is that there are two limits of the world sheet that theory that we can take, the UV and the IR limit. Both are conformally invariant. And in those cases, you find that there's more symmetry on the world sheet that would protect any potential from happening. So we expect at late times that we do connect with the weakly coupled string picture, and at early times we have really weakly coupled gauge theory on the world sheet. And it's an open question whether is a regime in between where a potential might appear, because that would indeed sort of make the space-time picture change quite drastically, because then you cannot move around the individual positions arbitrarily.
Finally, does the gauge theory on that known space have a natural Big Bang state?
Yes, actually, we thought about that. There's related to the conformal invariants, there are two vectors one can choose. There's a conformal invariant state, and there's one state which has an interesting property that it sort of looks thermal for observers far out. So if you don't want to study the propagation through the singularity, but just start from an initial state, there's one preferred state which I would call the vacuum state in the Minkowski space from which you divide out the Lorentz boost. So you start from the Minkowski vacuum there, and in terms of the Windler, analogous to Windler space, in the Milner space, you use sort of similar coordinates as in the Windler space, you do find some thermal state.
Nathan? You go back to the original string action and you rescale the B and C growths with opposite phases of E to the minus X plus. Can you absorb the Dillikum term?
B and Z?
So you just take the B and C growths, which have some background charge, and you rescale them in opposite directions. Can't you? We absorb that d squared x plus term?
Well, you're talking about the world sheet action on the fixed Riemann surface. Here it's really, I think, the string coupling should have to do with the way we weigh different genera. I don't think there's a way I can remove it.
Well, there's a background charge for the BC ghost, so it will be...
If you bosonize it, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's a thought.
From that approach, I'm not sure if it should be called a singularity, because you can be absorbed by redefining...
No, the reason we call it a singularity, I mean, it's clear from the space-time description we gave, and I don't think there's any doubt that there we do have a geodesically incomplete space. So as far as that definition goes, we do have a singularity.
Eva was next, I think.
So you mentioned this question of whether this provides, in this example, a notion of what this nothing might be, but you also emphasized this interesting direction of flow where the singularity was associated with the UV of the field theory, which had more degrees of freedom. Because it's
a
two-dimensional angle theory.
Sorry, can you speak up? I mean, so it's in the UV, that's right.
It's in the UV, so in some sense it has more degrees of freedom near the singularity than it has...
that's right.
So it seems like there's an interesting zoology of examples, some of which have a flow towards fewer degrees of freedom near the singularity, as in these tachyonic ones, whereas
it goes
the other direction, which... do you have any thoughts on what...
I like to think about cosmological evolution as inverse RG flow, and then I think it's... you're right, actually, in our picture, the matrices have n squared sort of degrees of freedom, while we have sort of n roughly.